session number 11750, reel 16.
Mr. Lineker, reel 16. How long were you doing this sort of routine for? You said you started in late January, 45.
Yeah, about the 21st of January, 45. And we passed out of Poland into the northeast part of Czechoslovakia and then made our way right across Czechoslovakia, bypassing the main towns and cities, taking us through the rural parts and forest areas and what have you. And we came out on the southwestern part of Czechoslovakia into Bavaria, a little to the east of Regensburg. I think I said to you, Peter, Nuremberg, but why I got that on the brain, I don't know, but it was Regensburg.
Now, do you remember any sort of incidents from that? You know, I mean, it's a lot. That took you a fair while, didn't it?
It took us from the big, from the 21st of January till the end of April.
So about 3 months.
3 months
on the march.
We must have covered about what, 600-700 miles. Going round sometimes in circles. Sometimes you felt that you'd passed that point before. Whether you had, I don't know. Whether you were going crazy, I don't know. But.
Do you remember any incidents, you know, things that happened on the march, or is it all a sort of blur? Because it's a lot.
A lot of it is a blur, but I think I mentioned about where we got a couple of days repairing a railway track. I mentioned that, haven't I? And the episode with this lad stealing these few handfuls of beans, and we was made to stand out in the bloody freezing cold.
So towards the end, I mean, throughout, was it winter all the way through up to April? I mean, did the conditions improve as spring came along? Or?
Towards the last few, shall we say, March. Talk about March, end of March, beginning of April. There was the thaw then. And you was walking on slush, weren't you? Eh? Cold slush then from the snows.
That must have messed up boots.
Well, it messed us up properly, that, didn't it? And then when you was going in the barns at night, you were full of bloody mud, slush and stuff, and you hadn't even the proper means to wash on it from a water point in the farmyard. And you can imagine how many would be waiting to do that, wouldn't you? To get it up quick and crawl in the straw. And that would cold frozen up many a time.
Which was worse then, the cold or the slush? I mean, the frozen or the slush?
Well, I think the cold were worse. Oh, the cold was worse. It was terrible. Like living in a fridge.
One point, what did you do about latrines? Oh, well, not, there wouldn't be latrines. What did you do
no
about
latrines,
the toilet?
You just, the toilet was where? On the.
On the march or
oh,
on the.
Oh, well, if you went to the toilet, you had to stop and do it, and then you had to run like bugger if you could run or walk fast, or it'd try and make your way back to where you was, or in that case, you'd be with somebody else.
Did you stay with us?
But, as regards dropping out for 5 minutes rest, you don't. If you wanted to pee, you had to pee there at the side, quickly.
Did you lose your friends from? I mean, did you stay together?
Never stayed with the same person. I couldn't recognise him now who I walked with.
So, did it change though, the different people, or was it just this one person? As you went,
It changed. Even when you dispersed and went into the, I might have been walking for all day with a bloke. And all I knew was what is his face showing.
So the E72 people gradually spread into the march. You all
spread.
Did you lose pace or gain pace? I mean, what were you know?
Oh, I was losing pace. Do you mean the?
No, I mean, were people you knew tending to leave you behind, or were you tending to leave people behind?
Never knew, never looked for that. Never bothered whether they were behind or I was behind. It was a case of keeping going. It didn't sort of track people. As I say, I'd be all day with a bloke and I wouldn't know him only from what he looked like through the icicles on him. And then we'd disperse into the barn and I might never see him again. I wouldn't even be next to him.
Would you talk on the march? I mean, did you...
No. We talked when we got in, whoever was nearest to talk to. But we never talked. We had to keep energy and not think. Just we walked blindly. Nothing in your mind except to keep going and follow the fella in front, whoever he wants.
What about when you did stop in the evening, what would you talk about? I mean, would you talk about...
Well, about the day. I mean, how many more days it's going to be like this? How far do you think we went today? I wonder what they'll knock up for us tonight, if anything. I wonder how many we'll do tomorrow. What time do you think we'll set off? If it's not far, we might get his head down early tomorrow. Things like that, you see.
And were you starting to lose weight faster? I mean, you'd lost weight in the mine.
Yes.
Did it really fall off on the march then?
Yes. That's when I did go to a bit bonified then, because the food, number one, and the walk.
Did all this, the lack of food, all that work, did people faint and things like that, or did you faint?
Well, I never fainted, but the blokes I've seen have dropped, and as I tell you, you couldn't stop and help but pick them up. You had to get up yourself, unless somebody was wanted to do a good turn and help him. But when the Russians dropped, that was it. They never got up again. They were putrid to see. Terrible.
So, you were walking through Czechoslovakia and...
Came out southwest, just by Regensburg, into Bavaria.
Any difference between...
Now, we knew there was something was happening then, because we got a bit of news there, just as we got into Bavaria, and it was... According to some, well, is it news or is it, what to call it, is it rubbish? We was diverting. I don't know whether somebody had made it up or what. Because around Regensburg it had been heavily bombed with a RAF. And we had to cross a bridge wherever we were going. And we couldn't use this bridge because... It had been heavily bombed, the Regensburg area. And then that's when we started to think, well, there's a flap on now. But where are we going to go? And you can see all these signposts, Regensburg, and places that you recognised in the area. And then towards the end of... I would say it's about the 28th, something like that, maybe 30th of April. Is that right?
30th in your notes.
Yes, 30th, 28th, 30th. Yes, it's all around, it's around Hitler's birthday. And that was the day, within a few days, he saw himself off, didn't he? Committed suicide, so they say.
Now, were you aware of it, this... Before we go on to when you were released, were you aware of the tremendous psychological pressure this march had put on you? I mean, and after all your previous experiences, I mean, did you start to feel a changed man during this march, do you think? Did it have an effect on you?
Well, do you mean, did I feel depressed or... Well, all I felt was, where are we going? What we're doing? Is it going to be like this all the time? It can't be like this all the time. Why can't they get a parcel through to us? Why can't they give us at least some food? why can't he give us a rest? Things like this cropping up. You're getting you down, in other words, getting you down. But you'd always that little bit of encouragement underneath you to get home. Not to give up, to get home.
Did men give up?
I don't know, I suppose they did. Like, I'm going back to the same topic, aren't I? Where if they're depressed, you see, some might have even only just got a letter before we left, saying all this, some things had happened to them that had upset them, and they'd be trudging along and along and say, well, what am I trudging? What am I going home for? What have I got to go home for? Why should I put up with this? See, you don't know what goes through a person's mind, do you, Peter? You know what I mean? And if they've been taught such a lot about the next of kin or the wife, spouse, what have you, and they've let them down like that, it's a terrible thing. It's a terrible thing.
Right, so what happened then on the 30th of April? We think the 30th of April.
Yes.
What exactly, if you take us through that day, were you marching that day?
No. We'd stopped overnight in this little place. All I know is that it was near Landshut in Bavaria, which is a town. We weren't in the town. And the next morning, well, when we got out the barn or whatever they'd given us that night, there's only the farmer's boy there. Well, gone. Nobody.
What did you think then?
So, we thought, what's happening? So, by means or other, we asked him, and he said, gone, Finney. You see, he's going off. And he says, Americans. You see, point down there. He bleached up with us, we'll just give him that. And the next news, these American troops come on 1,500 weights and 3 tonners and whatnot. Patton's mob, Patton, 3rd Army. And of course, they whisk old the farmers by away, and they see us a lot there. And they give us chocolate and fags and what have you, what they could. They said, now, we're the frontline troops. We can't do nothing for you here. We can't sort of take you anywhere. You'll have to stop here. But you no need to go hungry. You know what to do, don't you? And we'll arrange for transport to eventually come see to you. Fair enough. So then we did the roaming. We did the roaming expeditions then. Went into the farms, and there was 2 or 3 shops in the village. And we commandeered what we could, what there were to eat.
Were you aware of the dangers of after a long period of starvation, of eating too much?
Overeating.
Oh, well, and also the sort of things you eat. Did you think about that?
No. And I even failed like that when I came home. But, no, we wanted grub, and grub we got.
So you just wanted as much as you could eat?
You just wanted a good feed.
Sometimes when you... that people say that when they've been starved for a long time, they can't actually eat much when they start because their stomach's shrunk.
Yes, because of the, what you call it, the same case of what I told you about the boy that died by stuffing a
peritonitis.
Stuffing a tin of bully beef into him. And I told you that episode in the hospital. Of course your stomach shrunk, but you still feel you want a bloody good feed inside you. Don't you? And I'm not saying that you got T-bone steaks and potatoes and what have you. No, it was it might have been a slice, a piece of a side of bacon, and you share it out between you. You see, or potatoes, cabbage tops. Even hams they was hung up in these farmhouses, you know, curing. Eggs, poultry. I don't think we overate, but we felt like a good a meal which we'd never had. I mean, two eggs would have been a meal then. You know, not bloody watery skelly with about three tops floating on, three turnips, cabbage tops floating about. I mean, a meal.
What about drink? That's something actually we've forgotten the march as well, so if you could cover that. Did you have enough to... What did you do about drink?
We had the water. We had the water on the march. When we landed. When we got to the farms. Water.
So you weren't that short of water on the march?
Oh, no, we got the drinks of... Oh, and I had my Watsit bottle, you know. My old water bottle.
So you were all right for liquids. What about when you've been relieved? Did you get a beer or...?
Oh, no, I didn't get beer. No, I didn't get beer. We were on water again because there was nobody had enough mint tea or coffee to provide for about all that bloody gang, was there? Really? You just drank what you could. But as regards the food situation, we covered that. Because in a matter of a short time... We weren't messing about very long there. They got transport for us. The three tonners. And they took us to the airport, or shall we say the fringe of the airport at Regensburg, would have been bombed. And we was just sort of make yourself at home in any way you want on the what do they call it at the airport, the landing strip, but on the fringe. You can imagine the outer perimeter of the airport. No huts, no tents, no, just make yourself at home there and go out and fend for yourself, which we did again. And keep your eye open for getting you out of here by plane. There was a sort of a meeting point where you was sort of listed for movement.
Now, how many...
Because you have to give your name and...
What had happened to the Russians? Because they wouldn't be being flown out, would they?
Never seen them again after that morning.
And how many of you lot were there? British, Canadian and the rest? Well, you know, other allies at Regensburg Airport.
Oh, there must have been scores. Scores and scores come from all where they congregated them there. You see, there was one, not only our column, there was other bloody columns, you know.
That'd be more than scores then, wouldn't it? That'd be hundreds, wouldn't
it? Oh, yes. Well, I mean, scores and scores is just a term. Oh, yes. We're just littered with them. Littered. Because they gathered them up as they'd gone along. Russians, no, never bothered about them. Nobody bothered about them, poor buggers. And eventually, I was, because I never made up with anybody then, put on a flight from Regensburg. And we flew in the Dakota. You remember that old plane, don't you? They'd flown us out in the Dakota. Still with all this bloody laced up gear on and all this, don't it? No, nothing. No change, you know. And they flew us to Reims. You know where that is, don't you? And there, it was an American transit camp. And they had a 24-hour round-the-clock cookhouse going. Never ended the line, never ended. And you set off and they give you a tray with all the compartments on it. That's their way of doing, with a decent meal and a cuppa. And if you could manage it, you could get on the end of the line again, and go round again and again if you wanted. And we stayed there. Still no change of gear. I mean, you could have a wash because they had ablutions and what's it. But I mean, it's the same old rubbish on you. For 2 days, about 2 days we stayed there. And then they flew us from Reims to an airfield, which I think is now extinct, outside Tring in Arts. In the Bob's base of the Lancaster. And so whenever we got out there, they was waiting with us, for us, with these pumps, the housing pumps. Down here, under your arms, in your hair, you name it, they pump this bloody powder in everywhere. Before we'd even put our foot on the soil nearly, you know, as we got out. They took us to a reception area, stripped us.
So you got back on the 9th of May?
VE Day, 1945. And they stripped us. And a good hot bath, all new clubber, medical, an all new clubber, 42 days compassionate leave, 6 weeks, and a few bob and a warrant to go on.
How did you feel about the end of the war and the end of you?
Ooh, what, when I got out of that plane, it was like, well, you could say now it was like winning the pools, wasn't it? But it was a marvellous feeling, you know. Man, you couldn't believe it. You couldn't believe even arriving in Reims and seeing so much grub going round and nobody watching, nobody, you know, bamboozling you at all. It was free. It was like a bird out of a cage. And then you started to wonder, I wonder what it's like at home. I can't get home quick enough. You know, I wonder what it's like at home all this time. Yeah, a million things go through your mind. A million. Because it was 6 years before I saw Dorothy, you know, from 1941. Oh, sorry, not six, five. Yeah. And you wonder what's going on. What's changed? And then when you actually land in England, I go, it's a marvellous feeling, you know. You could never... It's a feeling you could never recapture again. You never go through that again. And of course, we bang us on the train and home. Six weeks leave, and then I get noticed to go to Amersham. And that was a reassessment. Place, you see whether you come back a full shilling or not. And they give you little things about, say, a lock in pieces. Have you got the mentality to put it back together again originally as it was? And small items, even a bicycle pump. I mean, and then they give you a medical. Then you went on 5 mile walks and a complete physical and mental assessment of you. And after it all, I came away C3. You wouldn't get much lower than that, could you? And I don't think it was mental-wise. I think it was more physical-wise. But then on recapping, it could have been mental because I went off... I went completely off my head berserk when I was at home. They posted me to the... From the Durham Light Infantry, as originally was, they posted me to the RAOC company, which was situated in Manchester, my hometown. So I had a sleeping out pass at home and just went to the depots like going to work. Round about Manchester. And then at the end, when I was getting near to the end of the mob, I was posted to Lancaster in Quernmore Park with the RAOC. But on the release scheme, I was dealing with blokes that was due for release, and we was processing them there and taking them back to Ashton Barracks. And of course, on the Friday, and of course, when we dropped them off at Ashton Barracks, I used to come home for the weekend and go back to Lancaster on the Monday morning. And all that happened until it became my turn, when I was demobbed on the 1st of May 1946 in 28 Group.
Now, when you were demobbed, you did have mental problems. You mentioned you went berserk. Yeah. What were the symptoms that you can recall? I mean, it must be difficult.
The symptoms was quite easily to recall. It was aggression, acts of aggression.
Against everybody, or...?
Against everybody, particularly those he thought the most of, you see, especially in the home. The least thing, I would smash things, furniture, what have you.
Now, had you been, I know this is rude, but had you been in any way like that before the war? Because it didn't come out...
No. We'd only been married 11 months. We was as happy as two pigs. I shouldn't follow up with that, should I? Two pigs in whatever. But 11 months of happiness there, and we was talking about, we'll have two children, and one will be called this, and one will be called that. We were like playing baby house as kids. I was 19, she was 21.
But when you came back...
And when I came back, it changed. Suddenly changed.
And were you aware that you were being acts of aggression, violence and the rest of it?
I knew afterwards when I'd done it.
But you couldn't stop yourself?
I couldn't stop myself.
Could you see yourself... I mean, how did you see it? I mean, did you regret it? I mean, how did you sort of... Or did you not really know what was happening?
It was something that made me do these things because of something that I couldn't alter. I couldn't alter it.
So what decided you to seek treatment?
Well, I went to the doctors and... In fairly early stages there, then, you know, in the 40s, of psychiatry, and I went to the local psychologist in the Manchester Royal, and the doctor there, the consultant, and he prescribed ECT, the ECT treatment, which was then in its infancy. I mean, now they give you an injection before you have it. Then they didn't. They just put a rubber ring or whatever in your mouth to bite on, and that was it. Pardon?
What was it like? Do you remember?
You lay there, and I'll never forget it. The first time I had it, you have to take everything off your metal, you see. And in those days, which isn't the fashion now. They wore the socks, the suspenders on the socks, remember? Well, you won't, will you? And of course they had metal things on, and I left them on. And they didn't know because I got my trousers on, you see. But they was quite happy about taking rings and watches and whatever metal things, braces and that off. But they never thought about the suspenders. And of course I asked there, so you lay down, put this rubber contraption in your mouth, bite on that, you feel two things by the side of your temple, and that's it. Then you come round on a bed in a recovery ward, and you've got the biggest headache that you could imagine. And with me leaving the suspenders on my legs, I felt as if they'd been punched from pillar to post.